They will regulate a militia being necessary to the security of a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. We are going to be talking about what's going on in Virginia with the proposed changes to several gun control bills offered by Governor Abigail Spanberger. Lawmakers will meet 1 week from today to approve or reject those changes. If they approve the changes, then the bills in question become law. If they reject the changes, then they go back to Governor Spanberger. I guess they've still got to go back to Governor Spanberger for her signature, even if the legislature approves the changes. But if not, then the bills go back to Spanberger. She has to decide whether to sign them as they were presented to her or whether to veto them. And that would include the proposed ban on so-called assault firearms in large-capacity magazines that was sent to her desk, as well as a bill dealing with the public carrying of so-called assault firearms. And as we've discussed at Bearing Arms, the governor's proposed changes would seem to create an issue where any semi-automatic pistol with a magazine that holds more than 15 rounds of ammunition would be an assault firearm and would be illegal to carry in most public places. Now, again, the assault firearm ban, I hate that phrase, but the assault firearm ban that was passed by the legislature included a ban on the sale and the manufacture and the transfer of magazines over 15 rounds, but it did not include a ban on the possession or carrying of those magazines. So this is a significant change and one that could trip up a lot of Virginia gun owners, as we discussed with the Real O's, Stephen Gutowski. Take a look and a listen. Stephen, thanks so much for joining me on the program. It's good to see you again.
Absolutely. Always glad to be here.
Is that a gorilla shirt you're wearing today? Oh, yeah. Hey, how about that? Nice. Always like the band shirts. All right. So let's talk about what's going on in Virginia here. Governor Abigail Spanberger did not veto any gun control bills. I think we knew that was not really a possibility. But she didn't allow everything to go into law either, right? She signed several pieces of legislation. And then she sent a number of bills back to the General Assembly with proposed amendments, none of which I don't think are beneficial to gun owners. Some of them don't really seem to do a whole lot, but the big one, as you've talked about, really implements, in essence, a ban on not the purchase of magazines. That's already, taken care of as part of this thing, but being able to carry a firearm with a magazine that you already lawfully own, that can hold more than 15 rounds of ammunition, right? Because what she's proposing would turn every semi-automatic firearm that has a magazine that can hold more than 15 rounds in it, magically would be turned into an assault firearm, right?
Yeah. It's kind of a, Schrodinger's assault firearm situation here, where it's an assault firearm with that kind of magazine, a magazine that holds more than 15 rounds. And I guess it's not without it, unless it meets one of the other definitions, right? So, it's a little complex what she's doing, right? It's not like a straightforward thing, or at least if she is intending to do this, it could also be just sloppy work. I lean towards this as intentional, but I have reached out to the governor's office, by the way, for clarity on what she's trying to do with these changes. They haven't responded, but the effect seems to be that they've rewritten the very first definition of what an assault firearm is, where initially what the legislature passed said that any semi-auto rifle or pistol that can with a fixed magazine capacity of more than 15 rounds is an assault firearm. So she has changed that very slightly by just taking out fixed. So now it's any, and this doesn't make sense as written, right? But it's any semi-automatic rifle or pistol with a magazine capacity of 15 rounds. Now, obviously guns themselves, unless they have fixed magazine, don't have magazine capacity.
Right.
But the way I read it, and I think there's some people who are reading this in a couple different ways, but the way that I would read it is how you described it, that as soon as you put in a magazine that holds more than 15 rounds, if the gun becomes an assault firearm under this definition. And that's maybe not a big, it doesn't really have an impact on the sales part of this right. ban.
But there's another bill out there right. that bans the public carrying of assault firearms, right? On sidewalks, on streets, public parks, basically, you know, publicly accessible areas mm-hmm. throughout the entirety of Virginia. Yeah. It doesn't ban the open carry. It doesn't ban concealed carry. It bans the public carry of assault firearms, right? So
correct.
That, in conjunction with Governor Spanberger's definition of what an assault firearm actually is, that would impact a lot of folks who are legal gun owners. They've got their concealed carry license, or they choose to openly carry a firearm for self-defense. That would impact them if they're carrying, you know, a Glock 17 with a 17-round magazine.
Yes, that's exactly what this seems to do. This definition change, because I suppose a semi-automatic pistol without a magazine in it is not inherently an assault firearm under this definition. Now they keep the other definitions,
right?
For the sales ban, right? The one feature, you know, semi-automatic rifle or pistol that at least the pistol one is two features. The rifle one is one feature. And they go after things like pistol grips and telescoping stocks and barrel shrouds, things of that nature, like your typical assault weapons ban. That's really where the meat of the ban on sales comes in, because as we've discussed, if you don't have the magazine, I guess if you don't sell it with the gun, it doesn't necessarily. Now, some people do read that broader and think that it could mean any gun that could accept a 15 round magazine. The language is with, so however right. you read with is a question. I did talk to VCDL's Phil Van Cleve about this, and he said it's vague to him. I think his main reading is what we just discussed, but you could argue maybe. Even if you're carrying a gun that has a 15 round magazine and then you have a spare 17 round magazine that's not in the gun but is on you, would that count as with? That's the kind of clarity I'd love to hear from the governor on, at least to understand exactly what she's intending to do with this.
Mm-hmm.
But from my most honest read of it is she's trying to ban the carry of these magazines. The bill already bans the sale of new ones after July 1st, but it seems like the goal here is to, even if you legally possess 15 plus round magazine, which as you just mentioned there, many people who carry do carry magazines that hold more than 15 rounds. It's come standard on most full-size 9mm pistols. It comes standard now, honestly, on most of your subcompacts. I carry a SIG P365X Macro that comes standard with 17 round magazines. The Hellcat Pro from Springfield comes standard with a 17 round magazine. It's going to affect a lot of people and a lot of their everyday life if they carry a gun.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the one, I don't want to say silver lining, but I don't know if you ever heard the joke about the kid. The punchline is there's got to be a pony in here somewhere, as he's cleaning out the stall filled with manure. If we're looking for a pony in all of this, it's that this. If Spanberger's proposal gets signed into law, the legislature goes along with it, you now have an assault firearm ban that differs substantially from Maryland's. And I know the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals, has already upheld Maryland's ban on so-called assault weapons. This would be much broader, right? So this would be a brand new litigation. I don't think Snope would be precedential in this regard, because now, again, you're talking about encompassing commonly owned handguns. With commonly owned magazines. The gist of the Fourth Circuit's opinion in Snope was, well, these AR-15s, I mean, they're like machine guns and they're not protected by the Second Amendment to begin with. Well, now we're talking again, as you say, about, most handguns, most new handgun models that are sold on the market would be impacted by this law, at least with the magazines that come standard with them. So I think that, from a legal perspective, it might help us at least initially at the district court level. I don't think that a district court judge would have to depend on what the Fourth Circuit said in Snope. But of course, again, the real world impact is that, you know, folks' ability to lawfully carry suddenly becomes very limited. It's interesting. We've actually seen a couple of lawmakers not complain specifically about the gun bills that Spanberger sent back, but the number of bills overall that Spanberger has sent back to the General Assembly. Scott Surville, who was one of the authors of several gun control measures, complained that, you know, we didn't hear from the governor during the session. And boy, it's really unusual that, you know, governor would just send all these bills back with recommendations because we really didn't have this good relationship. Senator Louise Lucas has been complaining about Governor Spanberger sending a bunch of bills back. And I wonder, you know, do you think that the General Assembly is just a rubber stamp for what the governor has proposed here? Or do you think that they might actually push back a little bit on some of these things?
I think that's actually the short-term question to focus on before you get to the legal stuff, right? But although I do agree with you that this does potentially change the legal calculus, and especially because the Fourth Circuit used a pretty different standard to uphold Maryland's law with the whole military style weapons not being protected concept, which is pretty different from what you've seen in other circuits where they focus more on trying to rule out that like magazines or even arms to begin with. So, you know, it may change the calculus there because the Fourth Circuit was much more focused on, like you said, like AR-15 firearms and similar platforms to that. But whereas this would affect really literally any gun that you put a 15 magazine into, maybe even more than that, you know, like we just discussed. But yeah, I do think the most immediate question is how does the legislature react? Because they have two options, right? And this is my understanding is they only have a day. They have one day to go through all of these recommendations from the governor, and all they can do is say yes or no. So they can't like, it's not going to be some back and forth negotiation between the legislature and the governor on this. They can either accept the changes or reject them, and then it'll be sent back to the governor and she'll decide whether to sign at that point. So, you know, they may reject this and she may sign it anyway. Honestly, that's a possibility, I guess. In Virginia, you know, we have the rule of that the governors can only serve one term. They can't serve consecutive terms. And so, you know, this is the first legislative session for this new governor. We don't, even though they're obviously her party controls the legislature, we don't know exactly how that relationship is going to work out. And she did veto some things, or at least send some things back that I think the legislature didn't want necessarily to have to go through her recommendations on, even, you know, well beyond these gun bills. But and I would say that there is, you know, I don't know. Obviously, I think at this point with Virginia Democrats, it would be hard to rely on them pushing back on Spanberger expanding the scope of this assault weapons ban. You know, I mean, well, let's say obviously back in 2020, they didn't pass an assault weapons ban when they had the opportunity then, but the politics have changed quite a lot in the last half decade for Virginia Democrats on this issue, it seems. Yeah. So I wouldn't rely on them necessarily to balk at the changes to that assault weapon firearm definition. But I will say that she also sent back the carry ban with recommendations that one can, you know, it changed the definition to conform with her new definition for assault firearm, but it also removed some exemptions for law enforcement. So I believe it removes, yeah, for off duty and retired law enforcement, they had, and for licensed security guards, they had exemptions in that carry ban for those people, and Spanberger removed them. And that's something where I think you often see law enforcement groups will have more sway than maybe gun rights groups do among Democrats. That one, I would be more optimistic that maybe she's going to face a revolt from the legislature on that point. And then that would leave you in a strange, it would kind of, if that happens, if they send it back without changing the language in that carry ban, it actually, I believe, would make it so that the change to the assault firearm definition didn't actually matter because they had their own assault firearm definition in the carry ban when they sent it over, and she's recommending to change it to the one that she prefers. So if they don't do that in the carry ban, then it doesn't become, it doesn't apply to that. A lot of these, the 15 plus round magazines at that point is my understanding of it. So that's more, I guess, where I would, if you're trying to watch closely on what happens with these bills, that's maybe the most, where I'd see the most potential friction happening.
Interesting. Yeah. And again, I mean, all of this is subject to legal interpretation, right? And so, you know, if we get to that point where, you know, you do have that sort of split in the definition, one statute says an assault firearm is, you know, what Spanberger wants it to be. Another yeah. section of state law says, actually, no, that's not what an assault firearm is, at least when you're carrying a firearm.
Right.
You know, that's where you get, I think, into situations where an overzealous anti-gun prosecutor in, you know, someplace like Arlington or Fairfax County might decide to roll the dice and say, you know what, we're going to go ahead and charge you under that statute, not under this statute. And we'll see what the judge says. You know, this kind of legal ambiguity. And I think Phil even talked about that when you were talking with him, right? Like mm-hmm. it's all of this stuff is subject to interpretation. And yeah. it's not necessarily going to be just gun owners who are doing the interpretation, right? You've got Commonwealth attorneys who are going to be interpreting these statutes. You've got law enforcement who's going to be interpreting these statutes. And
you that would, might actually be something that the legislature takes into consideration here.
Yeah.
Like, do they want to make a mess of these definitions by accepting the governor's changes to the assault firearms definition in the sales ban, but not in the carry ban? You know, maybe they might have... figure they have to do all or nothing. And so I don't know that's one of the big risks I see. I mean, I think this is a fairly interesting political move from Spanberger because, you know, mostly what she's doing, she's sending some kind of mixed signals. Like in other bills, she's, you know, made it a little bit, she's moderated some of these bills a little bit. For instance, there's a gun storage bill that she said, well, gun locks should make an exception for gun locks as well, not just safes. Yeah. So she's made a couple small tweaks in the other direction, mm-hmm. but she's the most significant thing she did is this change to the assault firearms definition, which makes the bill much broader. And so she's sending a strange message, I think, by doing this stuff. Like, it's kind of a mixed message to me. Not that you expect Spanberger to be all that moderate on guns anyway, but she does try to project herself as a fairly moderate Democrat. And, you know, there was speculation that she might try to morph the bill into a permit to purchase mm-hmm. scheme like Paulus did in Colorado. She didn't do that, right? In fact, she did the exact opposite, right? She made the ban that was passed stricter. And that's a interesting direction to go. And, you know, we'll have to see if, especially really that's the Virginia, the Democratic senators, because that's where the closest, you know, they have the smallest majority there. They have two vote right. majority. So if you get two senators who don't want to do this, who are like, we've already gone through the whole process of making these bills exactly how we wanted them. We don't want to, you know, push one way or the other on it. Maybe they say no. I don't know. But in the end, you know, that's again going back to like, how much do you trust Virginia Democrats to push back on tightening the gun laws further? Right.
I mean, I guess we'll see in a week because that's when the session takes place. I will say, I think that the legislature has, I think they've got the upper hand here, right? Because if they just say no to these changes, let's say they're concerned about, okay, does this open us up to a legal challenge if we accept her language on, you know, what an assault firearm is? Are we better off just, you know, sticking with what we had? She's not going to veto any of these bills. I mean, I still probably don't not. Believe she's going to veto any of these bills. So if they send every one of these gun control bills back and say, no, we don't accept your changes, what's she going to do? She's going to sign all into law, right? I mean, she's not going to tick off the gun control lobby by saying, well, fine, right. I'm signing any of this then.
Yeah, that seems super unlikely, right?
So I think the legislature has the leverage. You know, they've got the upper hand here in negotiations.
Yeah. So it just kind of depends on whether they like these changes or not.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
And they didn't put them in there to start with. So maybe they won't like them. And it is. And like we start at the top of this, like we were talking about, these are kind of sloppy. the way they've done this. Like the effect appears to be that they're trying to ban the carry of magazines that they're allowing you to keep. Like they're not trying to, the bill doesn't confiscate your 15 plus round magazines, your 30 round AR mags, whatever. It just makes it illegal to sell them. And I think actually the magazines, you can't even like hand them down to your kids in these bills, unlike the actual guns. But you know, this is a way of, I mean, there's logic to it, right? Like if you don't think people should own these magazines, then you don't think they should carry them either. And maybe you don't want to push as far as, you know, making everyone a criminal just for having these things, but
it's that intermediate step between, an outright ban on possession and then just the ban on the sale, manufacture, and transfer, right?
I think they did this in Illinois, if I recall correctly, where you can keep your magazines after they lowered the limit, but you can't carry them. But, you know, this does push into like, just by doing what you or I do today. I mean, I don't know what your carry setup is these days, but most people now, the last, let's say, decade, you're getting magazines in your carry guns that are over 15 rounds. That's been super common since, I mean, people were carrying full size guns, you know, going back decades, but it's a push to have more capacity has been super common in recent years. I've moved to 17 plus in the macro, but you know, this makes it so that it criminalizes what you do today. And also, you know, I should mention too, this brings back up the Preddy shooting, because Alex Preddy had magazines that held, I believe, 21 rounds. He was carrying a 320 full size, you know, and you had a lot of Democrats coming out and talking about how, you know, terrible it was that Preddy was killed for carrying that gun. But at the same time, they're doing stuff like this where they're literally criminalizing what he did.
Yeah. And it would be a class one misdemeanor, by the way, punishable by 12 months in jail and or a $2,500 fine.
Just for doing what you do today. The thing, like, it's one thing, you know, obviously a sales ban is going to have a big impact on people because you can't keep acquiring stuff, but it doesn't make it illegal to do what you're doing today or to have what you have today. This does. And that's, I think, very significant expansion of this law in a way that is written so that it's not even completely clear. Like it's makes a category area, right? There's no pistols and rifles don't have magazine capacities if they don't have internal magazines, if they don't have fixed magazines. So just taking out the word fixed confuses the whole thing. It seems like this is what they're trying to do, but they won't even clarify or answer questions. Either the governor's office, or I also reached out to half a dozen of the most Democrats in the most competitive districts in the Senate, and none of them responded either. So, you know, I mean, that is one thing. They're not talking about it.
Right.
You know, Spanberger in her announcement said, basically, she just talked about how what she also did in this, the assault firearms ban, which is remove pistol grips as a feature for the shotguns that are going to be banned.
Right.
Which is a, she said that, but was
not for the hunting
purposes,
right?
Not for the rifles, just for the shotguns, semi-auto shotguns. Like, I don't know who that's for, who that's convincing, but, you know, she said, oh, you know, I'm clarifying the definitions for law enforcement and I'm removing some of the shotguns, essentially what she said. She didn't talk about this. She didn't talk about that. Her goal is to try and ban the carry of these magazines that are going to be restricted.
Well, if you're trying to, you know, tamp down enthusiasm for voting no on this referendum next Tuesday, you probably wouldn't want to bring that up. I tell you what, see, we're about to run out of time here, but you want to come back next Thursday? Sure. And we'll talk about what happened on Wednesday, which is when, you know, lawmakers will be back in session and they'll figure out what they're going to do with all these proposals from the governor.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that'll be the day where we know everything.
Okay. Well, let's do that then. Yeah. Let's have you back and we'll kick stuff around next Thursday. In the meantime, I would encourage folks, if you're not following Steven on social media, please do so. If you're not a subscriber to The Reload, go to thereload.com right now. Make sure that you are signed up. Make sure that you're checking out The Reload podcast every week. Steven does a fantastic job of bringing on folks from the Second Amendment space. I think Costas Morris was your last guest on the podcast.
Yes, from Second Amendment Foundation. We talked a bit about the DOJ and you know, his view of what's been going on there, and also Jeanine Pirro and some of her latest antics.
Yeah. We were talking about that on Cam and Company yesterday as well. But All right. Well, listen, man, I always appreciate spending some time with you. Thanks for everything you do. And I look forward to continuing this conversation when we know a little bit more next Thursday.
Absolutely.
My thanks to Stephen for joining us on the program. Looking forward to having him back again next week as we discuss what the lawmakers do here. I have no idea. I mean, I think there's an argument to be made that they'll accept her changes. I think there's an argument to be made that they won't. It's very difficult for me to crawl inside the pea-brained minds of anti-gun legislators. So I will wait along with you to see what they do. All right, on to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We'll start there. Not a true recidivist report, but it is a head-scratcher of a sentencing decision. The headline, former Michigan football coach Sharon Moore sentenced to 18 months probation. He was originally charged with home invasion, as you might recall. The 40-year-old also fined $1,000 in addition to being sentenced to 18 months of probation. After taking a deal that allowed him to plead no contest to two misdemeanor charges, trespassing and malicious use of a telecommunications device involving a domestic relationship. He had been facing a felony home invasion charge that carried a prison sentence of up to 5 years and a $2,000 fine. District Court Judge J. Cedric Simpson said that Moore's offense did not warrant jail time. I wonder, would that have been the case had he gone to trial and been convicted of felony home invasion? But the judge instead delivered a stern warning to Moore during the hearing, saying, "I don't believe when I look at the entirety of this situation that incarceration should be appropriate. But I warn you, Mr. Moore, should there be a violation, all bets are off. I don't like sending people to jail, but I don't have a problem doing it," he said. He said, "Frankly, Mr. Moore, you had no right to do what you did by going into this woman's home without her permission." And it was a woman, by the way, that he had apparently quote, engaged in an inappropriate relationship with, a executive assistant there at the University of Michigan. Again, the judge said he had no right to do what you did. "I know that she was placed in fear. It was a traumatic experience for you," meaning the victim. "It was certainly a traumatic experience for her, but you had no right to spread your pain to her." The victim in this case, Paige Shriver, who is Moore's former executive assistant, not happy. Through her attorney, she released a statement saying that Moore's sentence, quote, "does not reflect the harm done to me," saying, "He broke into my apartment, crying, yelling, enraged, and came at me with knives. I was threatened, and I feared for my life." The judge said, "Well, I would let Ms. Shriver know that this court is not by any means lessening the impact of these events." Okay. I mean, Moore still could have been sentenced to jail time by the judge, even with his plea deal. So the judge, I think, does bear some culpability. Well, it doesn't really warrant jail time. But again, the prosecutors in this case offering this deal to Moore, it sounds like it was a pretty open and shut case that he invaded her home without her permission, threatened to physically assault her, did not go through with that attack, but is that alone reason enough to spare him from, dealing with the full consequences of his actions? Apparently, according to the prosecutor and the judge there in this case. So there you go. Sharon Moore, former University of Michigan football coach. No jail time for what was originally a home invasion case. All right, today's Armed Citizen story from California, and this is an unusual one, not just for California, but in general. Sacramento County prosecutors cite self-defense in fatal Natomas High shooting during an attempted robbery. So you've got an attempted robbery that took place on the campus of Natomas High School. The victim in this case, a student, I believe a 16-year-old student, who was illegally carrying a firearm there at the high school. But prosecutors say he acted in self-defense when two individuals who were not students came onto campus looking for him. One of them wearing a ski mask and carrying a handgun. According to, I believe this is ABC 10 in Sacramento, investigators determined that the pair found the student, violently tried to rob him, leading to a confrontation. And during that encounter, the targeted student, who was also carrying a firearm, shot and killed the armed suspect. The person who was killed has been identified as a 16-year-old Dejon Sledge. So I don't know if we know the age of the student. Certainly not old enough to legally carry a gun in California and not allowed to carry a gun in a school in California regardless. The Sacramento County DA's office said after reviewing the facts, evidence, and applicable law, including self-defense, it concluded there was insufficient evidence to prove a homicide case beyond a reasonable doubt, saying in a statement, our professional and ethical obligation requires us to decline charges when the evidence cannot establish guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. The office also raised broader concerns about violence on school campuses, saying that schools should be safe places for students and that young people should not feel compelled to carry weapons for protection. Now, the student may very well face charges for illegally possessing a firearm in school grounds. ABC 10 did not note whether that was the case. I cannot imagine that the prosecutor would decline all charges, given that this is anti-gun California we're talking about here. But the actual use of deadly force by a student on this high school campus deemed to be an act of self-defense, or at least the prosecutor is not willing to go that far, at least acknowledging, okay, we couldn't prove beyond a reasonable doubt that this was not self-defense. And again, if you've got two individuals who come onto campus with the intention of violently robbing you, one of them is armed with a gun, you do have a justifiable fear of death or great bodily harm under those circumstances, right? Now, again, not allowed to carry a firearm if you're a high school student in California on campus. But that doesn't negate your right of self-defense. So whether or not it was an illegally carried firearm or if the victim in this case had stabbed his attacker with a protractor, that would have, again, been considered an act of a self-defense. Again, pretty unusual case. We don't normally see cases like this. I would note as well that for all of California's restrictive gun control laws, they didn't stop two minors from illegally acquiring and carrying a firearm onto a high school campus. That's because most of those gun control laws are aimed at legal, lawful gun owners, not violent criminals, prohibited persons, or including, I guess, juveniles. All right, on to today's good deed of the day in the right place at the right time. We'll enable to do the right thing. A good Samaritan in Pittsburgh who helped save a man from drowning after he fell into a river. This was, I believe, early Tuesday morning. It might have been actually early. No, it was early this morning. About 2:45, a man fell into the Allegheny River along the North Shore in Pittsburgh. But a good Samaritan who was walking by heard his cries for help, was actually able to grab onto him. I guess did not have the strength, though, to pull him up, but at least was able to hold him in place, keep him above, you know, his head above water until emergency crews arrived. A EMS district chief who arrived on the scene first, according to Channel 11 News in Pittsburgh, with the help of the bystander, were then able to pull the man from the water, drag him up onto the riverwalk. He was treated for hypothermia at the scene, taken to a hospital to get checked out, but it looks like he's going to be okay. Again, because this anonymous Good Samaritan was in the right place at the right time and willing able to do the right thing. And again, even if that right thing wasn't, you know, full extrication out of the water, he did what he could to save that individual's life. And, you know, that was enough. So whoever you are, anonymous Good Samaritan, we thank you for your very good deed. Now, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company, and I want to thank you for being a part of the program as always. Looking forward to seeing you back here again tomorrow. Well, be sure to check out BearingArms.com throughout the day today, keeping you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation, including, but not limited to, what's going on in Virginia. We're talking campus carry in New Hampshire, talking school safety in Minnesota, and more. So be sure to check it out. If you like what you see, we'd also encourage you to become a VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum member. Just go to BearingArms.com/subscribe. Use the promo code FIGHT and get 60% off your membership. And no matter what tier of support you choose, you'll be getting some great benefits, but you'll also be supporting the work we're doing at Bearing Arms, and I want to thank you for that. We do have our weekly live chats on Wednesdays for VIP Gold and Platinum members, 1:30 Eastern. Be hanging out with Hot Ears Ed Morrissey and a lot of our crew. Would love for you to be a part of that as well, if not this week, next week for sure. So again, BearingArms.com/subscribe and use the promo code FIGHT to get 60% off your membership. Have a great rest of your hump day Wednesday. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.